Big banks kick off the third quarter earnings season with mixed results. General Motors and the United Auto Workers Union move closer to a deal to end a strike. And it's debate night.
This is the most crowded stage in recent history. There are 12 candidates on, and really only three polling in the double digits. So I'm looking at some of those other candidates, you know, Beto O'Rourke, Pete Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, who have been part of the conversation for a long time, but are polling in the single digits and really need a breakout moment and are just running out of time.
It's Tuesday, October 15th. This is the PM edition of What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer, says he won't comply with a congressional subpoena for documents related to his efforts to press Ukraine to undertake investigations that could benefit the president. Giuliani said his lawyer, John Sale, sent a letter to Congress informing lawmakers that he wouldn't comply with the subpoena. He also said Sale, a former assistant special Watergate prosecutor, is no longer representing him. The House committees have warned that refusal to comply with their subpoena would constitute evidence of obstruction of the impeachment inquiry. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent is the latest official to face questions from lawmakers on Capitol Hill as part of the impeachment inquiry into President Trump. Kent is the most senior-ranking member of the Trump administration to provide testimony so far. He had raised concerns earlier this year about efforts by Rudy Giuliani to undercut Marie Yovanovitch, the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. Last week, Yovanovitch testified that President Trump had spent more than a year pressuring the State Department to remove her from her post. President Trump says Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will travel to Turkey next week. The White House says Pence will participate in a bilateral meeting with Turkey's president on October 17th and reiterate the commitment to maintaining sanctions on Turkey until a resolution over its offensive in Syria is reached. Meanwhile, Russian forces have begun patrolling the line between Turkish and Syrian armies in a northern Syrian city where U.S. troops were previously stationed. Kurdish fighters have struck an alliance with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad against Turkey's offensive to seize territory held by Kurdish forces. Assad's government is backed by Russia and Iran. Observers say the U.S. withdrawal from the region has created an opening for Moscow to expand its influence. General Motors and the United Auto Workers Union are closer to a deal that would end a 30-day strike. Earlier this morning, for the first time since the strike began, GM's chief executive met with union officials. The two sides made progress in recent days on thorny issues like wages and the pay scale for new hires. Union officials from GM's plants across the country have been called to Detroit for a Thursday contract update. The United Kingdom and the European Union may be closer to reaching a divorce deal. Negotiators are working ahead of a summit in Brussels later this week, and we report that they're closing in on a draft text. Officials still cautioned that talks could stall as Britain stares down an October 31st Brexit deadline. But sources who spoke to The Wall Street Journal said a deal could be possible as early as Wednesday morning. For the latest on this developing story, please check back on our website, WSJ.com. Big banks reported mixed results in the third quarter. Goldman Sachs reported a pretty steep decline in profits. J.P. Morgan, on the other hand, posted its seventh straight quarterly gain. That was enough to help send U.S. stocks to a higher close on Tuesday. Joining me now with more details on the banks who have reported so far is Wall Street Journal reporter David Benoit. David, let's recap the results we have so far. It's a bit of a mixed bag. Goldman Sachs saw profits fall more than a quarter, and J.P. Morgan saw higher profits helped in large part by its consumer business. So what were the major factors at play for these two banks?
Sure. So like always, quarterly earnings are a little tough to slam together, I think. But essentially, I think if you look at Goldman Sachs, they had a few idiosyncratic things really to them where they had some investments go sour. And they really struggled in their investment banking business. The overall market for things like debt underwriting and stock underwriting has fallen, and deals are a little bit off this year. So those are kind of key Goldman things. For J.P. Morgan, it was a little bit of a story of the biggest gets stronger. They saw a really good strength in their consumer bank kind of across the board, which is just a powerhouse. And then they also had a little bit of strength in the investment bank off of pretty good numbers.
Since you mentioned the investment strategy, we saw Goldman stumble on its stakes in Uber. How big of a role did that play?
That's really a special thing for kind of Goldman. They certainly did not do as well as I think they would like. That moves around a lot. It's one of the reasons why Goldman talks about trying to find a more stable earnings base because of things like that really move it a lot more than they move a JP Morgan. JP Morgan has some principal investment stuff, but a much lower amount.
We also heard from Citigroup and Wells Fargo today. Anything interesting in the results there?
Sure. So Citigroup had a pretty decent quarter. They beat expectations as well. Both profit and revenue were up. And the big kind of thing for them is they have these targets they need to hit on returns. They hit the key return on tangible common equity number for this year. And it sort of sets up a question for next year. Mike Corbat, their CEO, has been promising since 2017 to hit these 2020 numbers. And a big one is the ROTCE, return on tangible common equity. Analysts don't actually think he's going to hit it, even though he just hit this year's. There's some question about whether that will continue. So we're going to watch that really closely. But they had a pretty good quarter across the board. Their consumer business is doing really well in terms of their credit cards. That's a big strength for them. And they sort of tend to benefit. They have this global reach. And Corbett talked about, listen, even though trade and the worries with China are an issue, we actually still benefit a little bit from some people moving things around. Wells Fargo remains an interesting story in the banking world. And their profit was down a little bit this quarter. And even though the revenue was up, and pretty much they were hit by lowered interest rates were the big problem for them. They kind of lost some lending profitability.
And that seems like another bit of a wait and see how Federal Reserve rate cuts will impact bank profits. Is it too early to tell, or are there some warning signs on the horizon, as you just mentioned?
Yeah, so this is the big kind of macro question and what we keep waiting to see. Certainly, the lowered interest rates does hurt bank profitability. It means you can't charge as much on the loans you're handing out to people. So far, it's only impacted them a little bit on the margins. They've sort of avoided this. Wells Fargo got hit a little bit more than others. But right now, like JP Morgan's net interest income, which is the amount, the profit you make from lending minus the amount you have to pay people for the deposits that you lend out, was up. And that surprised some people. And they sort of said, listen, we still feel pretty good about our year target for that number. Come back to us next year. We're not really sure what's going to happen next year. People are all over the map in terms of how many Fed rate cuts there are going to be. The banks are not sure really what's going to happen. There are kind of puts and takes there. You might lose some on lending, but there was a huge surge in mortgage origination, a lot of it being refinancing because people see lower interest rates. They want to recut their mortgage. So I think it remains to be seen is probably a good way to talk about that right now.
All right. Wall Street Journal reporter David Benoit joining me in our studio in New York with the latest on big bank earnings. Thank you so much, David.
Thanks for having me.
It will be a crowded stage in Westerville, Ohio tonight for the fourth Democratic debate. 12 candidates will be sparring, the largest slate in modern history. And it's the first debate since House Democrats began their impeachment inquiry into President Trump. Our Eliza Collins, joining us from the venue in Ohio, says that's one topic Democrats are unlikely to clash over.
They're going to try to be united against the president, and this is not an attack line they want to get involved in. They want to be debating policy. Of course, they don't want to be helping Joe Biden, who at this moment still really is in number one, kind of tied for number two. But they don't want to be sort of repeating the Republican attack lines.
The debate will also be Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' first since being hospitalized earlier this month.
Sanders has not been out since the heart attack, though he has given some interviews and video messages for his supporters. And in that, he's definitely said he's more determined than ever to fight for Medicare for all. His message basically being he was lucky to have insurance that allowed him to get this emergency surgery after his heart attack. He got two stents put in. And he said, but not everyone is so lucky. So he's using it sort of as a messaging thing. But the question is, he is 78 years old. He did have a heart attack. There is no way that people are not looking at him on this stage and wondering, you know, does he have the stamina?
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren will also be a candidate to watch. The latest polls show her closing the gap with former Vice President Joe Biden.
I think that Elizabeth Warren is coming into this debate tonight with a target on her back. She has basically been the only one to really show an upward trajectory, and now she is basically tied with Biden, who has long been the front runner. And we've seen some previews actually going into this. Biden himself, Pete Buttigieg, who is another moderate, they have started to really attack her and question her plan. She basically supports Bernie Sanders on Medicare for All, but has not come out with a health care plan of her own. And so we've seen them preview that a little bit, question why she doesn't have a plan, why she is not being clear about how much it would cost and how it would be paid for. I expect that to come up again tonight.
That's the Wall Street Journal's Eliza Collins. We'll have live analysis on the debate on our website, wsj.com. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.